Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is Helen Benedict. Benedict is a professor of journalism at Columbia University. She is the author of 11 books, including the nonfiction work The Lonely Soldier, The Private War of Women Serving in Iraq. Her novels include Edge of Eden and The Opposite of Love. Her most recent is a novel about Iraq called Sand Queen. It was published this summer by Soho Books. Sand Queen is based on 3 years of research and over 40 interviews with female veterans of the Iraq War, as well as many Iraqi refugees. Benedict has testified twice before Congress on behalf of women soldiers in regard to gender justice and sexual assault. I'm speaking to Helen Benedict by phone from her offices in New York. Helen Benedict, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now you've been writing a lot of both fiction and nonfiction, as well as articles about women soldiers in Iraq specifically. What originally got you interested in this topic?
Very early on, in about a year into the war, 2004, I was following the first few soldiers who came back to hear what they had to say about what was really going on, because what they had to say was so different from what we were seeing in the press. And I met two women very early on and asked them if they were veterans too. And one of them said, yes, I was in Iraq for 11 months. I was a gunner. I was shot at every night. But when I talk about it, nobody listens and nobody believes me. And you know why? It's because I'm a female. And when she said that, I thought, you know, it's true. I'd read already that even by then, more women have been serving in Iraq and being wounded and killed than in all American wars put together since World War II. And yet they were invisible in the media at the time, as they were for a few more years. You hardly saw any stories about women soldiers. Occasionally one hugging a child goodbye or something, but when you think about what was on the covers of the newspapers and on TV and in the movies and in documentaries, you wouldn't even know there were women fighting. So I thought, let's pay attention to this. This is a huge historical change, and I was very curious as to why a woman would want to be in the military, especially at a time of war.
Well, I can understand why you picked this topic. It is very interesting. Is this the first time that women have actually been in combat, too? I heard that, but I don't know if that's true.
No, it's not really true. After Vietnam, after the end of the draft, women started being recruited for the military in much larger numbers. And up until then, they had not been allowed to carry weapons. But then that ban was dropped, and they started to be trained in weapons. The ban is against ground combat, but women in the Gulf War and in Panama and in Bosnia were quite involved in the fighting, especially by air, but also on the ground to some extent, but not at all to the extent that they are in Afghanistan and Iraq.
Yeah.
And not in the numbers either.
Yeah, it's actually been quite shocking to me. So tell us a bit about the Sand Queen's evolution. How did you come up with this topic, and how did you do some of the research?
I spent about 3 years interviewing some 40 women in all the branches who'd served in the Iraq War and some in Afghanistan. And as I was listening to them, I heard an alarming number of stories about the sexual harassment and even assaults that they had been experiencing at the hands of their so-called comrades. Roughly a third of them said they had been actually assaulted, and nearly all of them had been harassed. So I went and looked up the statistics, because, of course, 40 people is not statistically significant, but there have been studies being done by the Defense Department and the VA for years about this, and I found that those same numbers reflected about nearly one in three women sexually assaulted and 90% or so harassed. It's not everybody, but the numbers are epidemic.
It's unbelievable.
It's shocking, and I just thought, you know, what are we doing sending our young women to war and asking them to make all the same sacrifices as men and yet having them be treated as sexual prey at the same time, or having too many of them? This is really shocking. And as I was interviewing the women, there would be moments when they would be unable to recount or talk anymore about the things that had happened to them, because the memories were too painful, not only because of sexual assault, but because of war itself. Mm-hmm. And they would fall silent, or their eyes would fill with tears, or they'd start to shake or have panic attacks and not be able to breathe, or crack jokes, deflect the conversation. And I realized after a while that it was in those silences that the true story of war lay, the true inner experience of what it's like as a human being inside to go from moment to moment through the horrors of war and the horrors of being mistreated also by your comrades.
It's
the territory of fiction, and that I wanted to explore. Mm-hmm. I needed fiction to explore in Sand Queen is what was going on in those silences.
It comes across so intimately. It's an amazing portrait. To tell us a little bit about the main character, Kate. She's a 19-year-old soldier sent to Iraq in 2003.
Sure. She comes from an upstate rural village. I have a house up here, so I'm actually talking to you from the area where she's from now. It's around Albany, where a lot of people enter the military because there isn't much work here, and it's a patriotic area. She joins, as many did before 9/11, and she joins the military police reserves. A lot of women are put into the military police. And she thinks she wants to serve her country and get respect from her neighbors and friends, and also to impress her father, who's a sheriff. And then 9/11 happens, and the next thing she knows, she's deployed to Iraq. She'd never imagined that she would go to actual war, where she is sent to the first and largest American prisoner of war camp we had, which was called Camp Booker in the South, which is now quite notorious, where she is made to be a prison guard. There she meets Iraqis for the first time at the checkpoint, and she is also guarding them and sometimes goes out on convoys. So she's a very idealistic and religious girl who believes that she's going to go out to help the Iraqi people. It's what she's told. And instead, she finds herself in a very brutal situation where fear and anger and the hardships of war and the brutality and lack of respect of her comrades really deeply changes her.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing the way you portray the change in her. You can feel it so intimately. I was really surprised to watch her transformation through your book. How did you get so intimately into her psyche?
Well, as I was talking to the women soldiers I met, especially the young ones, I was very, very moved by how idealistic they'd been and what good people they were, and what the war had done to that idealism. I found it heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt it very much as a human being and as a mother. My children are around that age. And I really felt for them, and I got very close to a lot of them. I mean, we spent hours and hours and hours talking over many, many months. So I wanted to get deep into the heart of somebody who was basically good like that. And I wanted to get to a different kind of courage that I saw in these soldiers than is usually talked about. Not the bravery in battle kind of courage, but the courage it takes to try and hold on to a moral center when you're in a really corrupt and corrosive atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very much what I wanted Sand Queen to be about, was the struggle both on the part of Kate and of my Iraqi character Naima to hold onto a core of moral values, to try and be a good person and fight against the way your morals can be corroded by war.
Mm-hmm. A lot of the books that I've read about the various wars through my lifetime, they've talked about that incredible inability sometimes to remain a human being. And,
yes.
And you see Kate's personality starting to crumble. You see her numbing out. And I thought that was quite astonishing, the way you portrayed that.
Well, thank you. The book is really about what war does to people.
Mm-hmm.
And it applies to all wars from all times and to all people. But it's very rare to have a war story told from the point of view of a woman soldier. I mean, there are hardly any such accounts, fictional accounts, as some memoirs in history, because we haven't heard much from women soldiers. Women have actually fought in guerrilla wars for centuries, but there haven't been very many books by them. War stories are usually a male purview. And I think because women are were treated so much as outsiders by the military in general, they have a perspective that's rather different from that of men. And so I thought it would be another way of getting to that perennial struggle of between, you know, hope and morality and the corruption of war.
And I assume Kate is a composite of some of these people that you had interviewed. Is that correct?
No.
She's
not a composite. She's really invented.
Ah.
I mean, everything in her is, of course, all the background facts are from my research and are accurate and real. And there are little moments of things that happened to her that came from stories that real women told me. But her personality and her story and who she is not a composite. That you can't really do that in fiction,
mm-hmm.
I find. Mm-hmm. I mean, she has to be much more real than a composite can ever be. She has to be invented whole. Just like when you meet somebody new, you don't look at a real person and go, oh, she's a little bit of Sarah and a little bit of Joy and a little bit of Susan, you know.
Mm-hmm.
She's just herself. With, you know, this little bit might remind you of someone and so on, but each person is unique. And I find that that's true of creating fictional characters. So I put away all my research, and I wasn't thinking of any particular person at all with her.
Wow.
With Kate.
She's an amazing character. Now, let's talk about the fact that you have testified in front of our U.S. Congress about women in the military and sexual assault and so on. What kind of answers do you get from these people? Why is nothing being done?
Well, in all fairness to Congress, they've been holding hearings about this subject, the sexual assault in the military, for a good decade now. And they keep passing mandates to the military to reform one way or the other. And for many, many years, they've been ignored. The military is like a nation unto itself, has its own criminal justice system and its own ideas of how to reform or not reform. So there would be cosmetic things done, but almost nothing else. There have been some more changes in the last couple of years, some better and more concrete reforms about how to train people to be aware of sexual assault, to avoid it, and also how to respond when it happens. But change, it's a cultural change. It's not just a matter of changing laws and rules. It's about changing attitudes. And the military has been a misogynistic, super macho institution ever since that first idea of the soldier, you know. Going back to pre-biblical times, I mean, you see it in all the stories, the Greek myths and so on. And to change the attitude to accept women as equals is very, very difficult. In a way, it's the last bastion of macho sexism, as an institutionalized macho sexism we have in our culture. And there are many members of it still holding hard on to that image. But just as don't ask, don't tell got dismantled, change can happen. And the more and more women, actually more women than men proportionally, are joining the military now because of the recession. And I think it will slowly change. But all male institutions have had a hard time when women first enter them. I mean, think of firefighters and police. And there's been a lot of hostility towards women. And the military is far behind everything else, in my view, with this, and is catching up slowly.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Helen Benedict. We're talking about her book about women in the Iraq War called Sand Queen. Now, Helen, can you tell us, you are also a trained journalist and a journalism professor. What are some of your thoughts about the way the Iraq War has been covered by American journalists?
Well, at the very beginning of the war, it was covered with a kind of blind patriotism that took over the whole country after 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
And when I contrasted the sort of rah-rah, we're going there to help and bring democracy and all that we were hearing in the press with what the soldiers were saying was really happening on the ground, it was pretty shocking. And then, of course, the press allowed itself to be led by the nose over the whole weapons of mass destruction farce.
Oh, yeah.
And it was also because of the embedding rules, you couldn't go there as an American journalist alone and free of censorship. You know, we were being controlled by the government to an extent where it started with the first Gulf War, but you know, it was much, much more than had happened in Vietnam. So we were being sheltered from seeing a lot of things and from hearing a lot of truths and being literally blindfolded. But gradually it got a lot better after the press recognized how many mistakes they'd made early on, and especially over the weapons of mass destruction and all the reasons for the war. There was a turnaround after quite a few scandals.
Yeah, yeah. I remember how shocked I was the way the press was covering it. And then it finally came out that they were indeed being controlled and being given press releases instead of being able to really observe.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people don't realize a couple of things. One is that soldiers and all military members on active duty sign a gag rule in which they swear not to tell the truth about what's going on to journalists. They're not allowed to speak about the mission. They're not allowed to criticize the military or the commander-in-chief, i.e. the president, mm-hmm. or their immediate commanders. There are a whole lot of things they're not allowed to say, or for fear of court-martial.
Mm-hmm.
There's a sense that so relying on active duty soldiers to tell you the truth about war is a losing game. And then when you're embedded, you're actually censored, and you can only go where the soldiers will take you, and you have to go under guard, and you can only see the things they want you to see. And I mean, I'm generalizing. There are exceptions, but it's a very different way of covering the war than it's been done historically.
Yeah. The shocking disconnect for many of us was the fact that so many of these soldiers kept portraying themselves as freedom fighters, and yet they were being censored and not free at all to speak the truth, which is what we were always saying that we represent.
Yes, yeah.
Which
exactly.
It's amazing. Now, why does a journalist transition to writing fiction? What motivated you to do that? Give you the freedom?
Yes, I've actually always been more of a novelist at heart than a journalist anyway. The Sand Queen is my sixth novel. And I like not having to rely on real people for a story, because when you rely on real people, you have to take so much from them. And you know, you run risks of hurting them and so on. And with fiction, you don't do that. There's no real person there to worry about. But you have much more freedom to go deep inside. And when you're interviewing people, they often have limits to how much they can reveal, either because they won't, and because they're being private, which they have a right to, or because they don't know themselves well enough or don't have the words. Lots of reasons why you can't get deep inside other people as you can with your imagination. So fiction is a way of getting the real experience, the inner experience of life that I think nonfiction can never do.
Mm-hmm. How do you talk to your students about journalism in this context?
Journalism is really important because we need to know what's really going on in the world, of course. We need to know what people are doing in our name and with our taxes, and we need to know how to vote intelligently, and we need to know history, current and past, and so on. We need to understand the world around us, and I think I love my journalism students because they are the opposite of narcissistic. They go into this field because they want to stand up for the downtrodden, and they want to pursue social justice, and they want to give voice to the voiceless, and they want to inform people. It's an educational impulse to be a journalist.
Mm-hmm.
And I find their generosity of spirit really moving. I love it. And they're not writing about themselves or even thinking about themselves. They love other people. You know, they're curious about other people and how other people live, whether they're foreign or familiar, and that's great and terribly important. But if for learning how the human soul works, I think there's nothing like fiction.
And do you tell your journalist students that as well, that they should consider doing both?
I ask them who's interested in writing fiction, and usually about half of them put up their hands. A lot of journalists want to be fiction writers, and of course there's a long history of it. Mark Twain, Charles Dickens, Annie Proulx,
mm-hmm.
You know, you can go George Orwell. I mean, there are just a million writers who've done both, probably most.
Mm-hmm.
So there's nothing unusual about it. And I say, if you want to talk about fiction, we can have a special class at the end. But I am in a journalism school, so I'm not allowed to actually teach them fiction.
Are you concerned, like many of us are, about the fact that investigative journalism and follow-up questions and so on are not being asked and not being done, and how it is affecting our democracy?
Yes. When I first moved here from England, which is where I'm from,
mm-hmm.
I was quite shocked at how soft most American journalists are. I was used to the British style, which was a lot more pushy when it came mm-hmm. to investigative journalism, at least, you know, and in questioning people and not so afraid of controversy. But British journalism didn't have to please advertisers.
Ah.
Huge, huge difference. However, I do think that the other problem is money, and investigative journalism takes a lot of time, and it's expensive, and fewer papers are willing to pay for that, to fund that, and now there's this whole online world of journalism, and a great deal of it doesn't pay.
Right.
I mean, it's shocking. They expect professional journalists and writers to write for free. You know, you wouldn't suddenly turn to a carpenter and say, make me a bedroom suite for free. But
yeah.
there's no respect for how much work it is anymore. And
yeah.
that alarms me a lot, because you can't do an undercover, in-depth, really important piece of investigative journalism without funding.
That's right. And then we have turned into an entertainment culture. You know, obviously, so some of the old respected news, television news at least, are now hiring non-journalists to do news stories, which a lot of people are protesting, I've heard. You know,
yeah.
It's turned into entertainment.
Yes, and citizen journalism can have its place, but we have to have standard bearers, otherwise we don't know who to believe anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have to have people who check their facts and know how to do balanced reporting and not just assume opinion is fact, and we have a big problem with that right
yeah.
now.
I agree with you on that one. I want to ask you this. You said that you interviewed about 40 people and so on to craft The Sand Queen. Have you shown the book to some of these people? What kind of a reaction have you gotten from other women soldiers?
I've gotten a great reaction. A lot of them are very... It's not easy to read, especially if you're still hurting from your experiences. But there's that factor of, oh, this is like my story, and I thought I was alone. I thought it was only me who felt this way. And I get a lot of wonderful emails thanking me for making them not feel alone and realizing that their experiences are common. I know there's a veterans group who've got a book club who've read it, there are people interested in maybe making it into a film, and it's been really sweet, the response I've gotten, and I'm very glad that it can move veterans like that. But I wrote it for everyone, and I wrote it just as much for civilians to help them understand what it's really like to have been in this war, and hopefully for families who have their veterans coming home, and there's such a gap between being a civilian and being in the military, and there's such a gap of understanding, and I'm hoping my writing will help bridge that gap, and so that veterans won't have to feel so lonely when they come back.
Yeah, it's really an amazing book, Helen. I was really quite moved by it and astonished that I could get inside the head of this young woman who's so different than I am, and who's gone through this amazing experience. Do you feel like discouraging people from joining the military after doing the research, though?
I think women, and it's not only women who are sexually assaulted, by the way, but lots of men are too, but I just think people need to go in with their eyes open, and they need to realize that this is a culture that believes in bullying and is trained to bully, and sniffs out the outsider, whether because of race, like that terrible case that just came out last week about the young man from Chinatown who ended up committing suicide because in the Marines because he was so bullied.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's race, whether if they think you're gay, whether you're a woman, you're immediately seen as weak. If you're just not not the standard macho type, and it is there's a kind of Lord of the Flies atmosphere, you know, that encourages bullying and sniffing out the weak and turning on them. You have to think about whether you're really suited to handle that, and it's better to go in knowing that it's like that than to go in innocent and naive and then have it be a shock. Trying to discourage people to join, I can't really take on that position. A lot of people join because they can't find anything better to do or any better way to pay their way through life. So until we have better opportunities for people and free education and more jobs, I'm not going to be one to say don't join the military, because it can be a path out of poverty. And that's an important role.
Yeah, it is. Right? It is. And it is an educational opportunity for a lot of people that would not have one. I understand that, too. But to fling some of these people who just need jobs into such a jungle atmosphere is frightening to me. Your book really brought that home.
Thanks. I'd also like to just say something about the Iraqi side of the story in the last few minutes, because, of course, the other voice in the story is Naima's voice, who's very educated. Iraqi woman, a medical student who meets Kate, and they have an interaction. I interviewed some Iraqi refugees to get that voice right, and I've been corresponding with them about the book since, and they're really happy to have a Western book, an American book that portrays as an Iraqi as a
It did. It was amazing. It really humanized and told a real human story that we have not heard. So yeah. I really appreciate that you did that too. Now we are almost out of time. Are you working on any new stuff? Are you going to be writing about Iraq now that we have supposedly drawn down and are pulling out?
I am. I'm writing a sequel to Sand Queen. 7 years later, following some of the same characters, because even as we're drawing down, people are coming home and having to face that, and that will be going on for a very long time if they're not redeployed to the borders or to Afghanistan.
Yeah.
So we're still a country at war, and the war isn't over when it's over, as to quote one of my soldiers and many people. When they come home, they have to cope with being home and trying to change back into a civilian, and that's what this is about, the new one that I'm writing now, which at the moment is called The Soldier's House.
Well, great. Helen Benedict, thank you so much. Can you give some contact information?
Sure. My website is helenbenedict.com. Just my name run together. You can find out more about the books, and you can write to me there too. And the book Sand Queen just came out in August, so it's still available. And as is my nonfiction book about women soldiers called The Lonely Soldier, The Private War of Women Serving in Iraq.
Yes, I mentioned that in the intro. Well, Helen Benedict, thank you so much. Again, the book is called Sand Queen. I hope everybody will go out and read it. It's an amazing portrayal that you have not heard about what's been going on in the Iraq War for women especially. Helen Benedict, thank you so much and good luck.
Oh, thank you very much for those great questions.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.